Welcome to Leadership Lessons. I'm Todd Gray, the Executive Director for the Kentucky Baptist Convention. Leadership Lessons is a program where we talk to faithful leaders who are making an impact for the gospel. My guest today is Pastor Abram Crozier, and we're talking about practical church evangelism. Brother Abram, welcome to Leadership Lessons.
Dr. Todd, thank you for having me.
Thank you, brother. Let me tell you about Abram. Abram Crozier serves as the senior pastor at Trinity Southern Baptist Church in Falmouth, Kentucky. He is also the chaplain for the Falmouth Police Department, serves on the board of directors for Sunrise Children's Services and Northern Kentucky's New Hope Pregnancy Center, and is also the youth director for the Crittenden Baptist Association. Abram is married to Becky, and they have three children, Isaiah, Micah, and Graham. So, Abram, let's jump right into these questions. Tell us about your calling into ministry and how it led you to where you are right now.
Yeah, well, I've always been drawn to preaching and pastoring. It's something that's always been an interest of mine. When I was 8 years old, I literally would bring my whole family into the living room and start to preach to them from the book of Isaiah. And so it's always kind of been something that I've just been drawn to. And in 2015, my dad asked me to preach for a Baptist Men's Day. And the week leading up to that sermon was probably the worst week I've ever experienced in my life. Anything that could go wrong in my life kind of went wrong that week. And my 30-minute sermon turned into a 5-minute sermon. And so I told my wife I wanted nothing to do with preaching if that's the kind of weeks you had to deal with leading up to a sermon. And I fought God really hard for a couple of years of that call, and until finally God kind of just convicted me in the middle of my bedroom while I was studying. And I surrendered to that call, and I told God I'd go anywhere he sent me, and I would do anything he said to do. I didn't expect him to send me to Falmouth, but it did open up some pretty big doors, and I got to go to a church in Alexandria where it was a little bit bigger, and I was a campus ministry resident. Yep. And they opened up their doors to me, and they offered me a full-time youth job. And it was funny because, you know, I kept saying to myself, I really want to go into pastoring, not as much as I love youth ministry and I love the next generation. I really wanted to go into pastoring. And so I talked to Roger Palmer at Crossings. Yeah. And kind of told him where my heart was. And he said, Abram, you need to go to the elders and tell them where your heart is. And so I did that at the end of that summer. And I went to the elders and said, listen, my heart is pastoring. And they pretty nicely said, well, you'll probably never make a good pastor. You need to stick with youth ministry. Yeah. And so I kind of made a decision there that I was just going to follow God and not follow man. And so I put in my 2 weeks notice, and within 10 minutes, I got a phone call. Wow. From another church saying, hey, will you come and fill in for me in the next couple of weeks? And so between those 3 months periods between churches, I was at a different church preaching at different churches every Sunday. And I felt like it was God confirming that I kind of made the right decision in following his call. And the end of that year, 2018, Trinity called me. They said, we just let our pastor go. Yeah. And we need you to fill in for the month of December so that we can decide if we're going to close the doors. Wow. Or try to find somebody stupid enough to come on as the pastor. And by the end of that month, they ended up calling me as the pastor with 20 people in attendance.
So, Abram, we're going to talk a lot about Trinity Church and the condition. Yep. It was in when you came. But before we do that, describe for folks Falmouth, Kentucky. Most people in Kentucky, they don't know about Falmouth. They've never been there. Don't know where it is. In a nutshell, describe the town.
Yeah, we're famous for a flood that hit us in 97. Okay. And it kind of wiped out our town. And we have been recovering ever since then. There's a lot of division that happens in our town. Poverty's overtaken our town. Drugs have overtaken our town. They just impeached the mayor back in January. Yeah. So like we have a lot of struggle in this community, this small community of about 2,000 people that's in Falmouth, about 14,000 and some change in Pendleton.
Okay. So when you came to Trinity in 2019, the church had about 24 people. And now you hold two services with about 300 people in attendance. How do you describe what happened there?
Well, God is the best thing. God is the best answer. God has really been moving in our church in a big way. And again, I think part of it was they were at such a low position that they had no other option. And so I kind of came in here, you know, felt like it was a blank canvas. And we've just been really, really sticking with the Word of God, trying to make some changes. And really, it's just changing the mindset of the people of the church to say, you know what, we don't need to be focused on ourselves. we need to start focusing on those outside our church.
One of the things I've noticed that's unique about your ministry is that you're 35 years old and you preach every Sunday in a suit and tie, and you've raised up other young leaders who your greeters are dressed sharply. You sing from the hymnal or use old hymns. Tell us about that. That feels a little countercultural for your age generation, especially. Why those choices, Abram?
Well, it isn't though in our community. We're in a country community. We're in a small town community, and I think some of the older generation respects the reverence. I think that it comes with dressing up on Sunday mornings, but I also, you know, I asked a business guy once because I'm young. And so I said, man, how do I get these adults to listen to me and respect me when I sit there and stand up in front of them? Mm-hmm. And he said, Aiden, be the best dressed in the room, and they'll pay attention to you. Mm-hmm. And so we've kind of taken that to heart. And I've never forced. Here's what's even crazier. I've never forced anybody to dress up in the church. Mm-hmm. I just do it every Sunday, and then all these young guys, they'll just show up and they're dressing up a little bit nicer, and it's just become part of our culture.
When you look at your congregation, from the two dozen that were there 5 years ago to the 300 that you're looking at on Sunday mornings now, what does the congregation look like, age-wise, background? Who's attending church at Trinity Baptist?
So we're pretty multi-generational. We have them from old to young. And something that we do that is unique at Trinity, I know it's unique at Trinity, is we don't do children's church. Yeah. And so our kids participate in our service. I grew up in church, in the big church, and so I think that for me, when those parents start raising those kids in the church, we're seeing some amazing stories of kids who are leading their parents to the altar at the end of every service, and they're knowing that they're learning the hymns and the songs, and they're singing it, and they're participating, and they take up the offering with us. And I always feel like if they can sit through school all day long, they can sit through an hour of church.
Abram, you've led the church in a lot of different ways to promote or accommodate what God was doing through growth, or even try and stimulate some of that growth. One thing is, I know you've remodeled the sanctuary recently. Tell us about some of those decisions that you made, how you made those. Why did you make some of the choices that you've made?
A lot of it felt natural, the progression. A lot of it was because we had no other option. Mm-hmm. We were growing at such a pace that we were running out of room. And so we had to add parking because we ran out of parking very quickly. We've been knocking down walls in our church for the last 5 years because we get a Sunday school class going, and then they bust out of the seams. And so we have to break a wall down to combine classes. And so a lot of it's just been natural of we are out of room. And if we don't do something, we're going to miss out on be able to reach people that we want to reach. And so that's been a really big, it just seems like a natural progression, and it's fun. I think it's fun. They're problems. They're growing problems, but those are the best kind of problems to have.
You are an excellent promoter. I encourage folks to check you out on Facebook. You just do a really good job telling people what's coming. You're excited about the ministry. You're excited about life change and preaching the gospel. And so I think that's contagious to other people. One thing that I know you did a couple of years ago, you guys had a baptism goal. I think it was 52 people. But the year before, you'd baptized, I don't know, maybe 30 or something like that. But you had a card with every number, a laminated card for each number. And I think I took number 51 or 52. It was a prayer card, and you're praying for a number. Tell us about the decision to do that and what you saw happen as a result.
Yeah, so I actually listened to Dr. Steve Ayers and Jeff Crabtree at a conference that the NKBA was actually putting on. I'm not a part of the NKBA, but I saw that they were there, and I contacted Jim Woolams, who was the AMS at the time, and I said, Jim, is there any way I can come and listen to these guys? And he's like, we're full, Abram, but we'll make room for you. Yeah. And those guys started to talk about setting baptism goals. And at first I'm like, that seems kind of corny. But then I started listening to their heart behind it. And they go, listen, you set a goal as a church, and then you pray for those people. And what has been so amazing is every year that we set a goal, even if we hit the number or not, that doesn't necessarily matter. But we set those goals, and the stories that we hear from them, where, you know, a grandmother's been praying for a number, the next thing you know, her granddaughter gets saved.
And she's the number.
She was praying. Incredible. So powerful. And then at the end of the year, when we do hit the goal, we get to celebrate it, and we usually do something with food, and we you know, bring some cakes or something around, and we just celebrate the fact that, you know, we're praying for people, and people are getting saved, and God's moving.
And man, I'm not part of your church, but I had my number. I think it was 51 that I had, or 52. I think it was the last or next to the last number of the goal. 52. And I was kind of thinking, I don't really think they're going to hit this, you know, but I'm going to go and pray for number 52. And I was following you on social media when I saw that was happening. It was incredible. Just as you said, you're praying for a person to get saved, to have life change in Jesus and receive eternal life. And so, I appreciate getting to be part of that. I love that you did it.
We appreciate you doing that.
So, Abram, when you arrived at Trinity, what was your plan for outreach and evangelism? Was that just your heart, or did you, like, this is the great need? What was kind of driving you, and what are some things you did early on to help get things moving?
Well, I heard a pastor once say, you know, if your church was gone, would the community notice?
Wow.
And that really touched me to my core, because in 2019, they wouldn't have noticed if we left. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal. And so the first thing I did was cast a vision to be a church on the move, dedicated to the ministry of Jesus Christ. We wanted to get out of our pews and be a part of our community. And I even had a pastor a couple months ago. He was talking to me because we had, I think it was 7 baptisms on a Sunday. And he said, Abram, how are you guys doing that? And I told him, I said, honestly, it's crazy, because I have very little to do with some of this stuff, because especially on that particular day, we had 2 youth that we were baptizing that literally came to Christ because one of their friends, who's a member of our church, one of our youth, shared his testimony with them in the middle of a parking lot of a gym. And then asked them if they wanted to receive Christ. And so they came to our church. We got to talk to them about their salvation, and they got baptized the following week. But that stuff happens all the time. There's just so many people in our church that just loves God and wants to share about God. And I told that pastor, I said, listen, here's the reality. If your whole church is saved, they're not going to get saved again, right? And so if you want to see salvations and baptisms, and if you want to see church growth, the only way that you can do that is reaching the lost people. And what we have found out to be true is that when you reach one lost person, their life gets transformed, their friends notice, and then it starts this ripple effect where everybody, lost people bring in more lost people. And so we say that all the time at our church. And we can even trace half of our church growth of Trinity to one lady who was lost. She literally gave her life. She came to church, gave her life to Christ, was baptized, and then her kids came to church. They got baptized. Her husband ended up coming to church, getting baptized. Their friends started getting baptized. Her hairdresser started coming to church with her family. They started getting baptized. And so we see this ripple effect really with lost people. And so the plan for outreach and evangelism has always been really simple. We wanted to be a church that met the needs of our community, and we wanted to be able to share the gospel in a very clear way so people can understand. And for us, it starts in our parking lot and in our church and on Sunday mornings, and we're going to encourage them. We talk about evangelism in our sermons. We celebrate evangelism. We schedule evangelism. We budget for evangelism. And then when somebody gets saved, we celebrate it and we send them out because we want more people to hear that story.
Abram, if you're in a personal or a conversation with a fellow pastor and he says, yeah, that, you know, what you're doing just wouldn't work in my community. How do you, I mean, you laughed and I get it.
No, that's true.
It's a real thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how do you respond if it's like, yeah, I'm glad that's happening there, but it just wouldn't work where I am.
Well, I'm not smart enough to come up with anything like crazy outrageous. You know, it's not like I've come up with this thing that's because I used to always hear people talk about how, you know, back in the day, everybody used to go to church. And I always push back on that a little bit because I go, but the reason that they did that was because the church was involved in the community. Mm. You know, you look at these homeless shelters, they're all Saint whatever, or the hospitals are Saint Elizabeth. And it goes like the church used to be really involved, and we used to be out in the community, and we used to be a staple in the community. And we can do that again, but we cannot do it being inside our four walls.
That's
and so we got to get outside in order to be present, to meet needs of the community. And for us as a church, Again, we have to budget for it. Like, we have to actually, it has to be part of our conversation. Are we putting money towards our community? Are we putting money towards our lost people? And for Trinity, and we've made a lot of sacrifices doing that, right? Salaries are we don't, we don't have the greatest salaries probably out of all the churches. But for me, it's worth it because we're reaching people that need to be reached.
So there's really only two kinds of church evangelism: come and see or go and tell. And come and see, you're describing the atmosphere that you're creating, the from the parking lot to the pew. And so what are a couple of things that you're doing? And then we'll talk about the go and tell part, because you're doing that too. You're not doing one or the other. You're doing both. Tell us about the experience of coming to Trinity from the parking lot to the pew. The first time guest shows up, and even before they get there, somebody's probably invited them. What's happening? What are you doing intentionally to try and create an atmosphere where it's easy for folks to hear the gospel and respond?
Well, I think first of all, social media is a huge asset to any church or Christian. It's right there for us. It's completely free, and we can engage with tons of people through social media. And so we do a lot of on social media, a lot of fun videos just to get people's attention. But again, part of it is I had a pastor who was in between churches visit our church. As we, we call them secret shoppers, but they came. He came and visited the church as a first-time guest, never been there before. And I told him I want him to be completely honest, critique everything from a visitor's perspective, critique everything. And that was it was Doug Miller, and he came in. Everything he, I mean, he just went through and he did it in a nice way. But he said, I don't know where the restrooms are. We didn't have enough parking over here. We didn't. We the seats were uncomfortable or nasty. He had all these notes and. Boy, I took that to the church and I said, we need to get new parking. We need to get signage up. And we literally went crazy trying to make sure that we met those little things that we take for granted. Every we know what the restroom is and we know what door to enter into, but for lost people, they don't. And so, and I'll even say in our this next generation is so anxious about everything. The anxiety is so high. And so it's nerve-wracking, even when I do revivals, because I preach at a lot of different churches for revivals. I get kind of nervous. I go, what door do I enter in? What, where am I supposed to sit? I don't want to sit in anybody's seat. And so we try to eliminate that as much as we can. It's we have great signage. We have people that are waiting for by the doors that you're supposed to enter into, and they're ready to tell you where you need to go. And I think that is super important.
And man, you're showing people on Facebook, like, if you pull in this parking lot, this guy's going to be standing right here with a sign, right, to tell you where to point you where to go, and waving at you when you get here. That's I had no idea that you invited a guest in, Doug Miller, to do that, and how helpful that obviously was. I mean, that helped you say to the church some things that they really needed to hear.
And we also do, and this is something that's big for us. We always take pictures of our sanctuary, so people know where people sit. Like you can see how where the seating is, what it looks like. So when you walk into our church, you should already know kind of how the layout is by the videos we make. We do a lot of that stuff. We want people to be comfortable to walk into our building.
And it looks like a friendly atmosphere. I mean, they're not just friendly in the parking lot, but the folks are friendly when they're in the building. They're welcoming guests in. I mean, you're preaching the gospel. The singing is enthusiastic. So that's the come and see part, and folks are obviously responding to the gospel and being saved. How's the church going out into the community? Tell us about the go and tell side of how your church does evangelism.
Well, this was a blessing that came out of COVID, really. And that was for a lot of people, that was a hard time for a lot of people. For us, it was a big blessing because we were able to do a lot of cool things, mainly because I didn't know what else to do. And so because people were coming to us during that pandemic, we literally went to them. And so we started our outreach team, which literally we give them a $1,000 budget every month, and they literally go out and do different events and partner with different local groups in our community. But we also do big church events. We have the Baptist bikers come down for every summer for we call it the Biker Faith and Barbecue, and it's just a big Christian biker rally. And so we go into that knowing that we're going to have lost people there and we're going to go witness to them. And so we set those events up. We do events like this past Sunday, we had our Serve Sunday, where we literally closed the church to go pick up trash in our community. And so 200 people, we go out and we literally just swarm the town with people, and we're knocking on doors and inviting people in. And so we have a lot of those events where our church is able to have an opportunity to be with other believers and kind of watch that process of sharing the gospel with people.
So Abram, you started with, there were 24 people there roughly when you came. It's grown to 300. You had to get buy-in initially for folks to want to do some of the things that you're doing. I don't think folks can see it on our screen now, but before you and I started, there's a big screen there in the building that has a number on it, 13,000 and something.
136.
Yeah, tell us about that screen and that number. What's that all about? And if you could, I mean, you may even tilt your screen just for a second if folks can see it. Yep, there it is right there. And feel free to tilt it back to where you were. Yeah, so how long has that been there? What's it all about?
So 13,136 is the amount of unchurched people in Pelham County. Okay. And so that we our population is 14 and some change. We have a lot of lost people in our community. And so we decided that we're going to get that number printed on as many signs as we can. We're going to blast it everywhere. We wanted the church to say, I even joked with my church. I said, I'm going to say this number 13,136 times before the end of the year. Yeah. So you guys have it in your in your head, because even with the amount of growth that we've seen in our church, you know, with 300, that is not even hasn't even touched the surface of the amount of unchurched people in our community. And so a part of our buy-in is having our church understand the gravity of how many people are lost in our community. And we talk about evangelism. Here's the thing that people don't realize. Every sermon that I preach, I slip in evangelism. Mm-hmm. We celebrate stories of people. And this is, I grew up in Falmouth. This is my hometown. And so for me, there's more, you know, I love this town. Mm-hmm. I love the people of this town. They taught me in school. They're my classmates. They worked with me at the local grocery store. They played, you know, ball with me. And so for me, this community is means so much for me. And that number is something we talk about all the time. We pray about all the time. Yeah. And something that we did in 2021 to get more buy-in from our church was we actually adopted our city as our official mission field. Right. We ended up getting the mayor and the local judge to show up to our church on a Sunday morning. And they actually went through the adoption process with the gavel and the robe and everything. And they literally, we went through the questioning, and it was amazing because I think it did two things. It showed our church how serious we were going to be about reaching our community, but it also showed our community how serious we were about reaching them as well. And so, you know, those are kind of things that I just think we need to have some skin in the game when it comes to reaching our community. Last year, we renovated our sanctuary. First thing I thought was, you know what? We just spent all this money on our church. We need to spend some money on our community. And so we made a goal to raise $24,000 to give to 24 different organizations that were blessing our community in some way. Yeah. And we ended up raising $48,000. And so isn't that amazing? And so we ended up giving $2,000 to 24 organizations like Open Hands Ministry. These guys feed people every week, and it's Turner Ridge Baptist. So we were able to help a sister church in their ministry to our community. And it's just that we have some skin in the game when we're financially involved in our community.
Abram, I love it. You know, I mean, you and I did, we took an afternoon and knocked on doors for about an hour one day in your community. And the crazy thing about it was every house we went to, everybody there knew you. Like one was your former school teacher. One was a former coach that you'd had. One was a guy that he was obviously someone you had known for a long time. And so it was really, in that sense, it was no fun knocking on doors with you. You already knew everybody in the county, or they knew you. But I'm thrilled with how God is using you. Hey, tell us what you use to share the gospel. If you're training the people to share the good news personally, I know you're doing that. How are you training them? What are you using as a resource?
Well, we really like, there's a couple good resources. My favorite one is probably going to be Three Circles. Three Circles is a really a great app to use. You can get on your cell phone. The Life on Mission app has Three Circles, has the best news on it. Those are really easy ones. We also encourage just your personal testimony. Mm-hmm. is such a useful tool. It's in your back pocket at all times. You know, nobody can argue with it. And so those are all good, but I'll say this, because there's tons of resources out there. The greatest evangelism resource that you can use is the one that you use,
yep.
Right? You can download all the apps you want, but if you don't use these things, it kind of is pointless. So whatever resource that are comfortable with, you just got to use it.
What is the most common objection that you've encountered when you share the gospel with someone and they're not open to receiving Christ? What do you hear folks saying?
Well, I think the biggest objection that we see from people are we have a lot of people that have been hurt by the church, or they've been hurt by other Christians or church. I call them church people because that seems to be how it goes a lot of times. But they usually are very upset about it, and they're not shy to tell you about it. And I always tell people when they go, "Hey, I don't like church," I go, "I don't either," and then, and their jaw kind of drops to the ground because they're like, "Aren't you a pastor?" But I always tell them, I've been hurt by more churches than I could probably count. But the reality is, and I think churches, when you do evangelism, you're talking to real people, and got to be kind of honest with people. The church has done a bad job with a lot of people. We've hurt a lot of people, but I always tell people the most beautiful thing about church is the fact that all churches are filled with broken people who are serving a perfect God, and that's where the beauty in the church comes from, is that we're all broken. You come to our church long enough, you'll realize that I'm going to fail as a pastor, and I'm sure you'll fail as a congregation person. So that's just kind of the reality of life. But that's usually the biggest objection, is people that has just been hurt by the church. And for me, I want to make sure we especially in our church, change that mentality around. Because we don't have time for politics in our church. We don't have time for division. We have a very clear goal as a church. We want to love people and reach our community, and that seems to be pretty evident.
When someone is openly hostile to the gospel, they're hand up. I'm an atheist. I couldn't possibly believe that message that you're sharing. How do you respond to someone like that, Abram?
Well, I think the easiest thing to do is just to show love and compassion. Because whenever somebody's hostile to God or the gospel, it's usually because they're dealing with something that made them angry or whatever. We have a lady in our church. She actually came to our church a couple years ago, and she was so angry at God. I think the only reason she came to church was to let me know how angry she was at God. For me, I just there was no way I was going to run her out of the church and say, "I can't believe you're blaspheming against God." For me, I knew immediately that there was something else going on in her life that was. And so what I did was I just loved on her every Sunday, gave her a big hug, "Great to see you. Thank you for coming to church. We're praying for you. When you're ready to talk, we can talk." She was like that for probably a couple of months, until one day she just started to get everything off her chest. And she revealed that her son had been killed in an accident, and she blamed God for it. And so at that moment, she didn't need a pastoral answer. She just wanted somebody to listen to her. And after she got off her chest, God really did a great work in her, and she ended up putting that anger at the foot of the cross, and she ended up giving her life to Christ. We baptized her in the Licking River, and when you see her now, there's a weight lifted off her shoulders. There's a glow about her, and she's become probably a really big motherly figure in our church. And so having compassion and love for people, and prayer, just praying for people who are angry because there's something else probably that's going on in their life that's caused that.
Abram, tell us how you've seen God use prayer in evangelism.
Yeah, prayer is everything. Last year we did the Hoosier One campaign, and I absolutely love being able to do that. Baptism goals, we love being able to use those churchwide initiatives, because it literally keeps us focused on prayer. We pray for that lost person. Every person has a name. Every number has a name. Every name has a soul. Every soul matters to God. And so for us, prayer has to be the beginning of everything that we do. This is why we do the 13,136 number. We want to make sure that we're praying for these people so that their hearts are ready when we walk up to them and want to share the gospel with them, that they got a softened heart.
Abram, the Lord's made you a leader. You're leading in your place of ministry right now. What has God used in your leadership shaping experience? A person, a book, something in scripture, somebody that just influenced your life? What's the Lord used to shape you to become kind of the leader that you're becoming now?
Well, I have a bunch, but when I first got into ministry, again, the NKBA had that event with Dr. Steve Ayers and Jeff Crabtree. And so that I always think about that day all the time, because there was 50 pastors at that event. I'm thinking I seemed like I was the only one that heard anything that they said. But even since then, Steve Ayers and Jamie Ward have both opened up that church to me. They put me up in a hotel one day and let me spend 2 days with them, asking them all sorts of questions. And they have been such an influence on my life, and I know that they're available at any time. But also my dad, I think about my dad all the time. My dad has pastored for a very, very long time. He was the associate pastor here at Trinity when I was a kid. And I'm telling you what, he just, I, every time I try to complain, it's hard for me to complain, because I'm 35, and he's gone through a stroke. He's had health problems. He has to use a cane just to get up behind that pulpit. But he is just as excited to preach today as he was when I was a little kid. And he's such a huge inspiration for me in my life. I also think about, and I'll even say this, there's a book that I always go back to that I think is super important, because, and I've used this all throughout my ministry. It's Gary McIntosh. He has a book called One Size Doesn't Fit All. And that has been such a huge, because people don't realize pastoring a church of 20 is completely different from pastoring a church of 300. And so that book literally breaks down how you should be leading your church in all those kind of different seasons of that progression. And so that's been a really big one. And then, of course, the KBC, you guys, we have the greatest convention, I believe, in the SBC. I know for a fact, if I need to call any of you guys are there in a heartbeat, and I've never had to hesitate to call you guys if I ever needed something. And so we're thankful for your leadership more than anything, and everybody at the KBC.
If a minister, if a leader wants to see the church grow, they have to grow with the church, and you're
Yes.
describing a personal growth trajectory. Abram, last question. Sometimes folks could look at a church like Trinity and see the growth, the rapid growth, the multiple baptisms, praying for baptisms, emphasis on evangelism, and think that a church like that could be a mile wide and a quarter inch deep. But that's really not the story there. You're seeing generations of men discipled and growing into leadership themselves. Tell us a little bit about how you're seeing leaders raised up who have that same sense of passion and calling on their life.
Well, optimism is contagious. I believe that with all my heart. And so when I've been in churches where I just felt like I was being dragged down and wanted nothing to do with ministry, because it was like, this is so exhausting. For me, personally, for me, I think ministry is the greatest job on the face of the earth. The fact that we get to sit there and share about Jesus Christ, I just feel so privileged to be able to do this every day. And I feel like that excitement is contagious to those that are in the congregation. And for me, my biggest thing is I want to help people grow. And so when they sit there and go, hey man, I'm thinking about, I want to teach a Sunday school class. For me, I'm like, yes, let's do it. We and the way that our church has grown, we have a very small staff, and so we rely heavily on our volunteers. And so there are so many opportunities for somebody to kind of just step up and get into a leadership role and do something out of the ordinary, that I think is super important. And for us, we do a big focus on men in our church, right? We think that men is important. And so we have community groups where they build ramps, all right? And they'll take care of kind of the building side of stuff. And so we really do invest in our men of our church. And it's been such a blessing to be able to watch, because there's such a need in our community that I just, there's a plethora of, I could give you a thousand things that you could do. Even I like our, we have a funeral ministry. We have two funeral homes that do funerals all the time, and they're always looking for somebody to help, because families don't have churches. And so that's one of my favorite things to do, is to do funerals, because it gives us an opportunity. One, it gives our young people an opportunity to get some preaching in, but it also gives us an opportunity to share the gospel with a group of people that probably never would have been in church. And if you, I'll let me tell this story before I go. This is, so we had a lady pass away last week from our church, real sweet lady. And I was on my, I do personal, my personal evangelism on my own time. I go to a UDF. It's a gas, just a gas station. I go there every, it's right between, my house and my church. And so I stop there every day, and I pray to God, give me an opportunity to share the gospel with somebody or whatever. And I did this on Saturday, just this Saturday. And I pulled in right before I was heading to the funeral. I was dressed in my suit and I had the car was all clean. And a young adult walks up to me and says, "Hey, your car's so clean. Do you drive people around?" And I said, no, I'm going to a funeral. You know, I'm preaching a funeral." And he goes, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to hear that." I said, no, don't be sorry. I know where she's at."
Yeah.
And then I said, "Listen, do you know where you're going?"
Yeah.
And it was almost like this lightning bolt struck this guy right there at the gas station. I was able to witness to him and share the gospel with him. And one thing that we have these little, I don't know if you can see that.
Mm-hmm.
We have these little trendy cards.
Mm-hmm.
And literally on the back of them, it shares a little bit of the gospel, but it sends you to our website where I have a gospel video.
Oh, wow.
And so I gave one of those cards. Yeah, I gave one of those cards, and we have our church, they all have that. And so I pray for that young man, but I just love those kind of opportunities that God gives you, and we have to be ready for them. Somebody asks you how you're doing, all you got to do is say, "Man, we're blessed.
Yep.
Let me tell you why."
Yeah,
you know?
That's good. So, Abram, if you just reach 10% of your population, the unchurched part, you guys will be at 1,300. Is the church prepared to move in that direction, do you think?
Well, there's already talk of it. We're constantly figuring out what in the world are we going to do next, and we're praying through that right now. The deacons are praying through that, but we're excited. God's got it figured out. We just got to be obedient to Him.
Brother, I'm grateful for you, your ministry at Trinity, your dad and his ministry, your brother who plays drums for Jason Levin's band. You taught him everything he knows about his work.
That's right.
Man, thank you for taking the time to join Leadership Lessons.
God bless you, and thank you, Dr. Todd, for your leadership.
You're Thanks for listening to Leadership Lessons. This program is made possible by the generous contributions by Kentucky Baptist through the Cooperative Program. For more information about the Kentucky Baptist Convention, go to kybaptist.org. And for news about how Kentucky Baptist churches are making a difference, go to kentuckytoday.com.